This is the ERP Advisor.
Today's episode, avoiding ERP implementation failures.
Well, thanks everybody for joining me today. Just quickly about ERP Advisors Group, we are one of the country's top independent software advisory firms, and that's important because that means we don't take commissions or referral fees or cuts from any vendor. We're solely focused on what's best for our clients. This is all we do. We don't do any other cybersecurity or whatever stuff, or auditing or tax work. We're also independent and unbiased. We work across all the software vendors. I think even this year, I think we did a count that we've worked with 24 different software vendors and implementation partners. So there's a lot of stuff going on. We do have roots in Big Four consulting methodology. I think for our Secret Santa, I got a gift this year that said something about the Enron ethics department manager. I got a mug that said that. That was really cute. So having that Accenture sort of Anderson background has helped a lot with establishing how we do things today. Very methodological, a lot of methodology based in what we do. And we actually need to update the slide. We have performed over 500 software advisory projects. And I think at the beginning of this year, my hair was completely black. Now it's more gray. So it has felt like it. We've had quite a year. But the good news is, if we go to the next slide, we've learned a lot about what to do and what not to do. And I think maybe the, I don't know if I would say good consultants, but maybe the honest consultants would say, you kind of always want to be your, as a client, you always want to be the next client because you learn so much on your current clients that you can take those lessons learned into subsequent clients. And I think several years ago, we just realized we have been through so many different successes and challenges that that is the spirit in which we put this deck together today to share with you all from a CPE perspective. So we're going to talk about success criteria first. We're going to go through a whole bunch of stuff here. I'm going to try to stay a little bit high level, but we'll definitely jump into some details here. And please, if you have questions, please send them through the chat. We'll do our best to answer them at the end. And if we don't have time, we'll still answer them. We'll get back to you through email. So ERP implementation success criteria. You know, it's really interesting. Every slide, every presentation we do, I sort of look at it. I'm like, is this just too obvious? And the answer is it's not, because I think what happens in our industry is people, sponsors, CIOs, a lot of CFOs and a lot of controllers, they go through this process of looking at new software. Oh, we need to change out our accounting system, or oh, we need to get a new ERP or whatever it is. And they kind of go through the process and then it doesn't go well, which unfortunately happens a lot. I think one of the things that does sort of get you set for a successful project is really just saying, what are we really trying to accomplish? It seems so obvious, right? But maybe there's also this other part about let's measure the success. So when we see successful implementations, they are based on either strategic criteria or tactical or both for that matter. And some of the strategic reasons why we see ERP implementations go in are supporting new business models, meeting regulatory compliance, and reducing dependency on legacy technology. Very honestly, if those are strategic drivers or situations that you find yourself in and you think that a new enterprise software is going to help, it will. It absolutely will. Of course, you have to do all the rest of the stuff we talked about, but just, I would say 9 out of 10 needs analysis projects we do where we're just sitting down with a client just trying to figure out, look, should you switch or not? We kind of go back to these basic three things and say, okay, if these three things aren't here, and it might be one or two or all three, then it may not make sense to do the project. So those are really key success criteria from a strategy wise to look at. And then on the tactical side, I don't know. It seems like most of our projects, all five of these items are valid, from reducing manual work. I think that's pretty obvious for you folks on the call, you know, from if you think about the record to report process or even order to cash or procure to pay, there's a lot of stuff that has to happen for all of the financial records to ultimately end up in the GL and then the financial statements correctly. Well, if we're doing a lot of manual stuff there, well, you know, it's probably time to do some automation. We had a client recently that was doing basically their PO process and a lot of their AP process manually. And so we said, shoo, okay, we can help you with that problem. The rest of the problems I'm not so sure about, but that one makes a lot of sense. Improve analytics and reporting. I think most of the projects that we go through, this is one of those points that clients just say, I got to know more about my business. I got to know more about my nonprofit or even my government agency. You know, what's really happening out there? And, you know, I want to know about it so we can do things about it. So, I mean, that's really even the spirit of AI where, you know, there's certain things happen and we can code into a system, do this when this happens, do that when that happens, right? That's the basics of AI other than taking over the world. But we'll talk about that in other calls. Just kidding. Trying to make sure you guys stay awake here 8 minutes in. improve analytics and reporting is really important. And it is something that an ERP can provide. But I may bust a few bubbles out there that, it's the beginnings of being able to get analytics and reporting. ERP is. ERP alone, yes, you're going to get far better reporting out of any system if you implement it today versus the system you may have implemented, oh, I don't know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 50. I don't think I've had one that's 50. Have we had one that's 50? I don't think 50. Probably 35 years ago was the oldest legacy app I think we've dealt with. So, how old were you again, Nick, at that time? Just kidding. That's right. So that was a while ago. But most of our clients really do want analytics and reporting. And you have to understand you're going to get a lot more with the new app, but it's probably not going to be everything you want because ERP doesn't solve the analytics and reporting problem. It manages and automates transaction processing from beginning to end. Then you can layer in analytics and reporting. So and all of them have tools to do that. And there's all kinds of best of breed stuff. Rebecca covers a ton of that stuff in our ERP Minute every week with what even packages like OneStream or, you know, even if you look at Blackline, well, that's not reporting and analytics. Well, take a look again, right? It actually is helping you on your close process. A couple other things here. Expedite execution of key processes. Your processes should take less time when you implement an ERP. And that is the truth. Implement internal controls. This is a very, very big one. Most of our clients that are growing, they're not just going to be public, but they're owned by private equity or they're owned by a corporate that's maybe even a different country, right? There's certain internal controls that are assumed in systems that older systems don't do. But that's a great success criteria to have for a new one. And then the last one here, provide visibility into key metrics. So it's not just about sort of your analytics and reporting, but also here are where we're at today with our daily flash report for sales, or here's where cost of goods are right now. And so getting that visibility from the transactions that are automated in ERP and layering those, maybe even have to go over to a data warehouse. I'm old school. Or a data lake, that's a little newer, but I love the data house, or was it? No, the lake house approach, which is basically, I could get into a technical description of what that is, but it ultimately is a house that's on a lake. Actually, no, it's a metaphor. It's basically even like a substructure within like a unstructured data source is what a data lake is, which is nice because ERP is very structured and that makes it a bear to migrate data into. We'll talk about that. But it also gives you number four there, implement internal controls. So providing visibility and key metrics through a data lake, lake houses, those kinds of things is nice because you can push data over and then you can run your reports. So this is really important because I really mean this. If you don't have these problems, you probably shouldn't be looking at ERP. You have problems that some other kind of software can solve. So, and I'm up to the challenge. Sean at ERP Advisors Group, 720-935-0825. You can text me literally and tell me something different. But in my experience, these are really good reasons and you will solve these problems with a new ERP. Other problems? I don't think you will. But let me know if you think it's something different. Good. Thank you. Let's go on to the next slide. So here's our first question. Again, we're 12 minutes in. Nobody better be asleep yet. So this is your first question. Please answer the question if you need the CPE. Your implementation success criteria can include strategic criteria, B, tactical criteria, or C, all the above. So we'll give you guys a couple seconds to answer that. Please put your answers in. I think we're throwing the poll up right now. Yep, you should see that. Go ahead and click on that answer when you're ready. I feel like we always need a little music during this moment. You know, interestingly, while we're waiting here, we'll give you guys another minute. One other challenge or one other criteria that comes in that is, has been on earlier decks, but we actually pulled it off this one, which I think is correct, is new management. Oftentimes when a new management team takes over a company, a nonprofit, any entity, any organization, they will drive towards, okay, I need new systems, right? And I don't think that's a bad thing to do necessarily, but I think you have to cautiously look at that success criteria because you really need to understand what you have before you go through a switch. So to get a corporate mandate can be kind of dangerous. Okay, good. Good. All right. Let's see. Can we show the answer? Oh, yeah. I guess the next slide shows the answer, doesn't it, Nick? Yep. The answer is C, all the above. I would have taken one or the other too. That would have been D, but just know they can include all that. Good. So with that said, I want to like give you the most practical and helpful insight of all time on ERP. And this is why I love my team. These guys are doing, you wouldn't believe the setup that we have here. I wish I could turn the camera around and show you, but we put a lot of time and effort into this stuff for free. And the reason why is because, unfortunately, as Rebecca and Nick had to hear about a half hour before the call, this call, I was probably dropping a few too many F-bombs about a software implementation that we're in right now that it's not going very well. And it might even be to the point where we're realizing that the software vendor lied to us about their capabilities. Fortunately, we've been holding payment. So too bad. I hate that. That is not the right way to do these projects. But unfortunately, one slips through here. And so I always think to myself, how can we help others to be successful and do really well with their projects, right? That's why our site is chock full of content. And you should definitely look at it if you're going to go through this stuff. But what you see in front of you right now, take a picture of this. You can always email us for the deck too. But and this is a really simple setup of implementation milestones. And it's built in a way that you would look at it and say, well, that's just the software development lifecycle. That's just the cascade, you know, versus the iterative development, blah, blah, blah. Oh, okay, listen, you got to do all this stuff. And if you don't have the resources to do this stuff, don't do a project, right? And that's kind of what's happening with my client right now is the software we bought was big. We all knew it was big, but their business has gotten a little bit bigger and a little bit busier than anybody thought. And so the people are less available. And so the vendor's like, okay, well, we'll come in and do it, you know, for a change order for 7,000 hours. And I can't drop any four-letter words on this call. And I will never do that on a CPE call, but you can imagine my head just goes pop, right? Because it's very frustrating. So with that said, do these things in your implementation and you will be a success, guaranteed. I absolutely guarantee it. And I know that because if your project failed, you didn't do one of these things. It's kind of mean to say that, but it's kind of true. So I'll get my composure back in. Here we go. So let me just walk through these. So initiate project is the first thing. You got to tell everybody in the company what to expect and that it started and what you bought and what the time frame is that you need from them and how it's going to impact their job and whatever else you can to just start this thing to say, okay, we're doing this, right? Seems obvious, but you know, there's even tracking of budgets that you need to set up, budget trackers, we call them. There's all kinds of things that go into that step, but just basically think with, you got to start the thing because it doesn't just magically just start. You actually have to initiate it yourself. And this is mostly on the client side that I'm talking about. Oh, but Sean, I hired a implementation partner and they'll do all this for me, right? Yeah, you and, you know, maybe the other 50 companies that they're working with right now. Oh, but we hired a small implementation company, so implementation partners. So they don't have that many. You're right. They maybe have 10 per person on their team. It's busy, guys. It's busy. So I think, you know, we talk a lot about, what's our phrase, Rebecca? Misconceptions with implementations. And we're doing all kinds of stuff on the misconceptions of implementations. You'll have to look at the site for more on that. But there's a huge misconception that almost all of our clients have and folks that we talk to in the market. Well, I hired the implementation partner. They're going to get this started and it's going to go. That's not true. They may be 3 months out before they do that. There's so much work you can do internally. So you have to initiate the project internally. Analyze needs, right? Even though you may have done some pre-work that led into the demos, the implementation consultants, and I mean the implementation consultants, the people that are on your project today, hopefully they stay on your project throughout the project. people change. There's a lot of turnover these days. So you need that team to understand what you need. You need them to analyze your needs. You should have a good idea of what you need too, so that you can communicate them to this team that's coming in. And, oh, they have a ton of experience in our industry, and I don't want them to know how we do things today or whatever. That's just faulty logic. You need them to understand where you're at today. They know what you should ideally do already, but they really do need to understand exactly what your particular make-to-order manufacturing process is and how you do QC and how you do purchasing. Well, it's like everybody else. It's not. There's going to always be unique business requirements, we call them, and those need to pop up in this second phase. Then there's migrate data. I wish I could put migrate data like as step 0000, which is like, please start the migrate data before you even think of doing an ERP implementation, because it's so freaking hard. the major misconception on this one is, well, I've got trial balances and I have to give you a story. I have to stop what I'm saying and give you a story. So we have a client right now. They're good. And we're going to work through this and it's going to be a great project. I know we're going to have a great income, our outcome on that one. Not great income, unfortunately, for me, but we're going to do the right thing for them. Anyway, data migration has been a bear because they're coming off of less structured systems. Systems like, I'm just going to say it, Excel, as I croak, is not very structured to do data migration out of. But also, so are some accounting systems that can lead to journal entries going into a system and have an unbalanced trial balance. But maybe we should call it a trial unbalanced instead of a trial balance. Yeah. So we're going through a scenario with the client, lots of data migration issues. We're working through, and we have a list of all the data migration issues we run into. And one of them is trial balances don't balance. And the CFO says, well, why didn't you tell me that? You know, what do you mean the trial balances don't balance? That's what it was. Well, when we got the debits and the credits, they didn't equal each other. time for some more CPE. But anyway, and he said, well, of course not. And he said, oh, what do you mean? Like, oh yeah, in our app, it doesn't balance. We know that. Okay, well, in order to put the trial balance into the new system, it has to balance. That's why you bought it. Remember that whole internal control thing, right? And instead of giving you guys back the file to make it balance, we're just going to make it balance. We figured out where the transactions were off and we fixed it. And then we put it in the system and then we have the client go in and verify and they say, okay, well, here's the difference between the old system and the new system. This is exactly correct, right? So that is such a small example of a teeny tiny little problem that can lead to really tens of hours of work that needs to get done in data migration. You can imagine with customers and vendors and employees and all the rest of the master data. I'll age myself there a little bit, but all the open transactions. And then, you know, look, for historical information, maybe it's maybe a couple years of trial balances. Don't go beyond that. I just wouldn't. But I need my sales so I can do prior year sales versus this year sales by customer. We're going to have to figure out some other way to do it. We just are, because there's so much effort that goes into getting those records set. I won't get into the details now. I think we cover that a gazillion other places on the site and on other calls, but it's a big deal is what I'm trying to say. All right. I'm going to have to speed this up or get off my soapbox a little bit. That's probably the right thing to do. Configure software. It's kind of funny, right? Because we're on step four, which is actually configuration. And you think the whole thing is about configuring software. It's not. That's the easy part. Because you have implementation consultants that that's what they do for a living. They can set it up. That's no problem. But can they set it up around what you really need and do it correctly? That's the hard part. But that's what you get an implementation partner for, who certainly should know your industry, and you should feel comfortable with them too, for sure. Build integration. So inevitably, almost all of our clients have their ERP or accounting system or main system. It integrates with a CRM system, or it integrates with a financial, an FP&A system, or it could be really just about anything that could be for integrations. You really need to plan those out. I'll give you guys a secret. And then maybe James, if you want to put your question into the chat here, I'll make sure to get it at the end. It looks like you raised your hand. A secret is we actually do data migration planning and integration planning literally right after we initiate the project, because I don't know who's on this call. And if they're on, I'm not going to use a specific name, but if you're doing an integration with a bank, it can take for freaking ever. So you want to start those early so that you work through kind of the issues that you have there. Conduct user acceptance tests. You can use Go Live as your user acceptance testing time. We've done that before. We told the sponsor, look, the people that need to be testing, they're not testing. So what are we going to do, right? Oh, they're too busy and they're this and that. Okay, fine. So we'll just go live with it and we'll hope like heck that it works, but we'll have a gazillion resources around to fix it. And frankly, when you do go live, you have to know that the first day of go live, it's not like we have to close the books on the first day of go live. We have to start incurring transactions throughout that month. So there is some time to do that. But please don't do that. I mean, after a call like this, you should know better, frankly, but conduct user acceptance testing, get your key subject matter experts to hit the systems, the end. Now, do they do a little bit? Do they do a lot? Well, of course, the more the better. But the reality is just having people in and seeing what needs to get done or seeing how the system is set up and getting their feedback early is phenomenal. So there's all kinds of stuff. I could literally spend, maybe we should do this. We could do like a week on each one of these boxes. People would be like, it would be like from Indiana Jones where they come into like the little corridor where there's just skeletons left with like cobwebs on them. But there's so many things in each one of these boxes to keep aware of. But the key thing with user acceptance tests is please do it. Training users, you know, most implementations, of course, training is involved. They do the training, but it is better to do the train the trainer. And we can contemplate and smoke pipes and talk about what's the best thing to do and right? No. You want your people to train the end people in your company because they speak the same language, but that means your trainer really needs to understand the system. So if I were you, I would have those people involved earlier than step seven, meaning your trainer should be involved probably even back to step two. And then go live. So go live is basically not sheer mayhem. Hopefully we planned a little bit better than that, but it's not a bad idea to have massage therapists around, maybe a margarita machine, maybe you have a taco truck out front. I don't know. But it can be a rocky time because that is finally the time where everybody says, oh, I didn't realize we were changing systems. Yeah, we are today, right? Well, how do I enter my AP then? Oh my goodness. Remember that step seven? Or could you have helped us in step six? But no, seriously, go live can be a beautiful event, or it can be some kind of a show. I won't say what kind, but I do think with the appropriate planning, you know, we have a template for a go live checklist. You should just email us and I'm just going to send it to you because I would rather you know what to expect than not. So there you go. That is the outline of the implementation milestones. Whew. Okay, good. Let's keep going here. All right. Next question. Again, confirming you guys are all still there. How many implementation milestones are there? Now, this is tricky. So A is one. B is three. C is eight. D is 20. Now, this happens to be the way we codify milestones. You could look at different project plans and you might see different things, but I'm telling you guys, I want you to have this specific number in your mind so that you know you're doing the right things during your implementation. So A, B, C, or D. we had a client that is implementing a large ERP that rhymes with MAP across their whole business, and their implementation milestones, you know, when you go down to subtask work breakdown structure, I mean, there's thousands and thousands and thousands. But when we talk about these key milestones, it's so important. I would even print that slide off if I was going through a project and put it on my wall and just cross each one of those milestones off after you've done it. Don't even do it in PowerPoint or projects or Primavera, or I mean, we review all of the project management software solutions. I'd put it on my wall. I'd blow it up. And then I would track it like literally that physically, because it feels good to scratch those off when you know you did them right. We good on answers? Good. Let's see what the answer is. C, 8. Good. All right. Let's move on from my cynical view here today. Good. All right. So our next thing that we're going to talk about is some specific pitfalls that we've seen. And I want to give some good examples so that you're aware of just what to look out for. We're going to highlight the ones that are in that purplish color, not the light blue. We could do it forever, but we're just going to talk about some of these key things. So if we go to the next slide. So pitfalls for initiation. You got to have somebody running around to control the project on your side. You do. Well, the vendor has a project manager. Well, I get it. But what do you think that vendor project manager manages? The vendor's projects. You happen to be one of them. They may have multiple. We have some implementation partners or professional services firms. Their PMs run 20 projects at a time. So they don't really get into the details of your stuff. They're more worried about resources on their end, right? Now, other firms have great PMs that are very focused on what you want to need. But you really should have somebody on your side who is a PM who can spend up to 20 hours a week just running the project, just making sure your people show up to meetings or making sure that the vendor's invoices are correct, or, you know, have a plan like something like this, right? Where you've got, this is sort of our less marketing view of an implementation plan. Like we talked about, there are sort of those 8 milestones, but you know, really what you're seeing there, take a screenshot, is a really good way. Like I told you earlier, data migration, integrations, and change management. I didn't mention that earlier, but those are 3 things that we cover earlier. Well, who's going to make sure this stuff's getting done on your side? A PM. Oh, by the way, if that person's already working 50 hours a week, and that's why you would want them to be a PM, because they're great, because you're going to give them one of the hardest projects, you might have to reallocate their workload, or maybe pay them a little more. Keep that in mind. All right. Next question, I think. Good. Your project manager needs to be able to spend 20 plus hours per week running your ERP project. And there might be some jokers and degraders out there that answer B. But if you do, that tells me that you know what the correct answer is, because you're just being funny. Haha. It's very, very obvious. So we'll give you a few seconds to answer that. I'm trying to think throughout, you know, 500 projects with EAG and then probably, I don't know, 200 with the accounting firm I was with prior. And then maybe not that many with Accenture because they're big, but I'd say 10. Or no, that's probably only 5, actually, maybe even 3. So say 800 projects. There are times where your PM doesn't have to spend that much time, but that means it's teeny tiny. We have a lot of folks probably on the call from Colorado. Most folks probably even know Lou Vischer, actually, with Lou's List. Good friend. We haven't talked to Lou a lot recently since he moved. But he did his implementation where he shut down the accounting department for a month and then just set everything up and then turned it back on. He told everybody, I'm not paying vendor invoices. We're not sending out bills. I'm doing nothing but my project for a month. And they got it done. You know, their project manager didn't have to spend 20 hours on the project. Usually what happens is the projects go on and on and on. So that's why you need somebody to manage it. But everybody who knows Lou knows that he is the type of person that would do that and that it would be successful. Good. Let's go on to the next pitfall. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, the answer, of course, is true. Okay. So in Analyze, it is interesting to see some of these things that there's no client lead involved in requirements gathering. They're too busy or brush off the meetings. You got to make it to the requirements gathering meetings, the analysis meetings, walkthroughs, like the first set of meetings with your specific implementation consultant people. There's people for a while. We could get into a whole discussion about AI and stuff, how that's going to change. But for now, we still have people, and that's good. I think that's very good. So you really want to make sure from your side, the client side, that you have the right people in those requirements meetings. And there are going to be some key decisions that those people have to make. And when those decisions just get pushed down the road, it can lead to a lot of problems, because I think implementation consultants are a little bit like pack people. I think that's the politically correct way to say it. Pack men, pack women, they're pack people. Wonka, 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 wonka. They want to keep moving down their project plan. They want to keep getting tasks done. And so if there's a question like, how do you want your chart of accounts set up? I don't know. I've never set up a chart of accounts in IFS or SAPs. How should I? Well, here's some things to keep in mind. Da, 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 da. Okay, good. Now, how do you want it set up? Okay, well, maybe we can work a little closer, right? Here's the secret. Make a decision and move on. It might not be the right decision, but if you make a decision, then you can start getting feedback from the implementation consultants. Like, oh, you don't want to set up your chart of accounts this way. You need to do it that way. Why didn't you tell me that in the first place? I don't know, but they told you. So just making decisions, making sure you get the best people to give you the opinions on them, and then moving on is the secret to really doing the analyze phase correctly. Good. Pitfalls of data migration. I think we should change the image on this to the lady should have her head hanging down, her arms down. She should be tired because there's so many pitfalls in data migration. You look at our testimony page on our website and it looks like clients like us. And then we do their data migration and they don't, because we're like the bearer of bad news. You know, it's like hiring a moving company and they're like, you didn't pack anything and there's stuff all over the place. And, you know, you got stuff in the attic and here, we'll move it, but it's just going to take more time and more money. Right. And the fact that we'll move it is incredible, frankly. That's why getting a good implementation partner is so important, is you need people that'll be there through thick and thin with you. But what leads to those problems, to the lady hanging her head over, I like this picture better though, Rebecca and Will, so it's fine, is not starting that data cleansing and extraction early enough, for sure, unbelievably, unequivocally, it's so important. And even if it's just, oh, well, you know, we're thinking about an ERP project in 2026. Okay, good. Start cleaning your vendor now, because then it's one less thing to do when you get closer to the implementation. All of those data management, master data management, data integrity policies that you have talked about, thought about, didn't do, you pay the penalty when you change systems. So, you know, we've also had other projects that go phenomenal in this area too. And it usually does come down to, there's like not a data steward or a data scientist or whatever. It's because they're already looking at the data and somebody realizes, oh my gosh, we got to clean this up. And even a little bit's better than nothing. And then lack of management over historical data expectations. So this is a nice way of saying, don't expect historical data because it is a nightmare. I had one client here in town who wanted to do historical data migration of every single transaction, bank transactions, of course, customer invoices, payments, credits, all the stuff on the AP side, all trial balance, of course, everything, every journal entry, everything for 6 years. And I said, I don't think we're going to help you on this implementation because I can't control that. There's so much variability there that I just don't think you're going to be successful. And he said, okay, good. I'll do it myself. And he did do it. And then he got fired. And then he started working for the software vendor that he actually implemented the software with, because he learned so much about the system. So maybe if you want to have a career in ERP implementations, you do a lot of historical data expectations, or you do a lot of historical data integrations, honestly, or migration, sorry. So kind of a rough story, but it is a good point to say that please, 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 please don't expect to bring all your historical data over, because the new system structure is so different than the old one. Someone has to map that over. someone has to clean your data. Somebody has to even load the data into the system and correct all the problems with the load files. And that effort is so big and so monumental. You can do it after go live. That's what we tell people. Do it after go live. They're so tired and they're done with ERP. They're not going to really do it because they don't need it. Get a data warehouse, get a data lake, go buy a boat for your whatever, your data house, your lake house. But you can stick this data into unstructured databases, data sources. And if you really need to get to it, you can go there. But guess what? Your legacy system's probably on-prem. You probably already paid for it. Leave the server up and you can always get into that too. Good. Pitfalls of integration. So like I mentioned earlier, you really do need to just oversee these integrations, and you would assume that the implementation partner will do all of it. Well, they don't. They're not going to call the bank. They're not going to call your payroll company, or they're not going to call benefits, your carriers for an HCM or a payroll implementation. You have to do that because you have the relationship. You have to find who's the right person. We have one client that had a ton of integrations with their third-party logistics providers, vendors, customers, especially in the food industry. You see a lot of this. Customers are implementations that you may be supporting yourselves. You might have a Walmart. You might have some other big box store that demands integrations through not Sterling Commerce, but any of the new B2B gateways or whoever it is in terms of their partners that they, SPS Commerce is who I'm thinking of. You see a lot of that. Now, the vendors may have adapters, plugins, little apps or whatever that helps to do that, but you've got to work with that other party to make sure that it's tested and that you really do understand the specifications. That usually falls on you. So that's why you want to start early. We've had clients that have had to, well, that's not true. We had a company that we came into their go live or to their implementation, sorry, to help them, which we don't do very often. We don't really come in the middle of implementations because it is a little bit like, you know, there's so much stuff going on. It's hard to kind of clean it up. But this one we did, and we identified, okay, these key integrations for our e-commerce and some other things, they're not there. And they're like, well, what do you mean? Like, they're not there. You needed to pick a platform. And we didn't, or you did that late. And now we're, you know, we got all the code, the configurations done, but the integrations aren't there. So you're going to have to push go live. So we had to push go live until the integrations were ready. So please start the data migration and the integration early. User acceptance testing. This is really important. You really do need to have, you hear these phrases, super users, subject matter experts. You know, these are people that know your business, but they also understand systems, and you need them in your app and checking it to make sure that it works the way they would expect it to, and that they document the failures. So then you can give that documentation to the implementation partner who can fix it, document they fixed it, give it back to that super user, and then they can retest it to make sure that it meets their needs. I would say for configuration too, that you don't have to wait till all of the configuration is done to test. Do it sooner. So you've got to be careful here, right? But if we're looking at I don't even have to explain it. Just, it makes sense. If you got purchasing ready, but the financial reports aren't set up, test purchasing. The sooner you get the feedback, the better. Failing to document the problems. This is important because, again, like we said earlier, the documentation is what controls the flow of information and communication back to the people who are supposed to fix stuff. So you definitely want to say where you're at with the test. We even have tools that show they're 67% done with testing, right? It's always hard to get to 100%. That last 10% is a bear. But it's good to know where you actually are with the test, what should be tested, how it should be tested, and what the test steps are, right? There's tons of documentation there. And failing to fix the problems and get the product retested seems obvious, but it is true that sometimes things come up and we just don't communicate that it needs to get fixed. And then at go live, somebody says, but I told you. And it doesn't matter what you told us. What did you write down? What did you put into the test script infrastructure? Like, we use a ton of Smartsheet stuff around this so that everybody can get to it and write it up and make sure that it's communicated. Good. All right. So here's the next question for you. I think it's, we're coming up here near the end too. So I think this might be our last question. So a pitfall of user acceptance testing is A, not having super users test the system, B, not having super users document failures of the system, C, waiting until all configuration is done to test it, or D, all the above. So I'll give you a couple seconds there. I'll think of the craziest anecdote to help drill this in. I do go back to a client where we, they were crazy, crazy, crazy busy during the implementation, just crazy busy. And we needed them to test. They wouldn't test. Told the CFO, they're not going to test, we're going to have to pull the trigger and go live to get them to test. Maybe we just tell them it's going live and it's not really going live, right? I mean, I don't like to manipulate people. One of the most honest people on the planet, as you can tell from this whole discussion. Most ERP people aren't quite this open about the realities. It's been one of those kinds of days. But we knew going into that go live that it was going to be a bear. And so we made sure that that we had all the resources available to support them and got through it and supported the heck out of them. It was almost like, again, UAT at go live. So that was a fun story. All right. The answer is D, all of the above. Good. All right. So we'll keep going, I think, on a few more pitfalls. So training. If you've made it through the gauntlets that we've talked about thus far, it is doable. I shouldn't be so negative, but all of these steps are very doable. And there are, Gartner's recent numbers were in the hundreds of billions of dollars in ERP spent in software and implementation every year. So this stuff's going on, man. Thousands, tens of thousands of projects happening literally while we're talking here. There's a reason for that, because you can get so much success out of these. That's why we started with the success at the beginning when everybody was awake. But as I go through these pitfalls here on training, once you know these pitfalls, you can do something about it. So implementers will not do all the training. And I'm working with a client right now, and their implementation partners are super good with configuration and the integrations and even the data. They're really, really good at that. And thank goodness for that, because it's hard and they're doing a great job with it. But their training sucks. I'm just going to say it. It's terrible. So what do you do? Well, they've decided they're going to have internal people, but they're also going to get another firm that's going to help them with the training. So that's more money, more time, et cetera, et cetera. I get it, but when you've got to be honest about what it's going to take to get this thing done too. So, maybe when you're selecting a firm, I don't know, maybe you want to meet the trainer who's going to be on your project. That might be a good idea, right? But they're still not going to do it all. Your people are going to have to specify for your organization, this is how we're going to use it in our processes. That's just going to have to happen. So you need the internal people too. Write justified project plans. I don't know if that's from PMI. Have you guys ever heard that phrase before? Write justified project plan. I don't know where that comes from, but I love that concept. Basically, it's, when you write justify something like in Word, the text all goes over to the left, right? But that right side doesn't change. When you have an ERP implementation where the go live will not change, here's what happens. Oh, shoot. The analysis period I'll just say this. So let's say training is this much time, whatever it should be. And then we have all the rest of the milestones we talked about earlier, the eight of them. Oh, the analysis took too long, or all the configuration took too long. Oh, the testing is taking us too long. The documentation and, oh, we got to do those integrations. Training time gets smush, 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 smush. Nope, time for training. So that's when we say shrinking time available for training to accommodate other tasks. It's not like those other tasks are not important. Of course, they're not. They're very important to do. We just assumed that it would take less time to do those things up front, so that when we got to the end and we write justified the go live date, meaning we didn't move it appropriately, you run into problems. I mean, I will tell you, I was looking at this earlier. I think, almost afraid to look. We are in 19, 20. We're in 20 implementations right now across a lot of people in my team. And I would say of those 20 implementations, some of them aren't, you know, they're all at different life cycle stages. I bet almost all of them are going to push. They are. And the reason why is because as you get into these projects, you don't know everything. We don't know everything. The implementation partner has never done a conversion of Microsoft Dynamics or Microsoft GP, Great Plains 2013 to, you know, Epicor, whatever, Kinetic. Nobody's ever done that before with your particular data set. So we all plan and set things up. And frankly, we try to set our timeframes pretty aggressive because if you don't, people don't put attention in the project. So you want to be pretty aggressive. Maybe you just tell your boss, you know, we're going to take, we think it's going to take 6 months at the earliest, but it's probably going to be 9 once we figure everything out. But let's just tell everybody it's going to take 6. But Sean, shouldn't you be more forthright with your people and blah, blah, blah? Sure, absolutely. If your people will give you the attention that is going to be needed, you're fine. And you probably could get it done in 6. So remember this about the shrinking time, the right justified, that it is, it doesn't happen because you're doing stupid things. It happens because you're doing important things that just take longer. Last thing on here, failing to do training. Some teams use Go Live as a time to train. I've talked through that, not only for UAT, but also for training. Okay, now they're in it and they got to learn it. And you know what? Maybe that's the approach you have to take, but be specific about it. You if that's what you're going to have to do, do it and do it right. So you have your trainers available. You have materials available. How do I little placards that, you know, in this age of digital and everything else, throw that out. Have a little placard, a paper that says, how do I enter a vendor invoice for your AP person or for sales or for whoever? You can have these little how-to guides. Of course, building videos into the page that the person's going to be working on is a beautiful thing too, that's specific to you. Maybe it's somebody with a really nice voice who's not as negative as I am. So people want to listen to it. But there's lots of things that you can set yourself up for success with, even though your training schedule gets shorter and shorter, or you don't even do it. Like, again, there's definitely hope. I think there's one more secret slide here. That is probably one of the things that I think a lot of folks just don't have the correct estimation of effort on, which is staffing your implementation. And I'm not talking about consultants. I'm talking about the internal people that are going to be required to actually do your implementation. you probably will need help. You probably will need people who can spend time on your project that are like some of your best people. Great. Okay. We can staff the project with our best people, but who does their job that they were doing before, right? Maybe you're big enough where you can take those best people and that can be their full-time job now, but what are they going to do after the implementation? I don't know the right answers to these questions, but I do know when we ask the questions and we think through them, we always come up with what the right handling is. But a lot of times you don't even know that these questions are coming in. So how busy are your people? How much experience do they really have to do these kinds of things? So just look at that honestly, and you're going to get through it for sure. I think that's it. I don't want to talk any more about that because I think the thing to say at the end of the day is, ERPs, you can Google ERP failure rate, right? And you're going to see, based on what the person is selling, either, you know, high rates or maybe a little lower rates. The software vendors are going to say a little lower because they want you to buy. The consultants like us are going to say higher, right? I hope we don't have anything out there like that. We're not into the fear selling. Just please be realistic. Just please understand what you're getting into. And know there is a roadmap with those 8 milestones. Know there's some pitfalls that you could fall into. Other companies have done it, other nonprofits, other government agencies, whoever, they've all done these things. And that means you don't have to, because you can learn from that. And at the end of the day, that's what I hope you guys got from this session is there's hope. You can work through this once you have the knowledge on how to do it. Good. I think we have a few minutes left here for any questions that may have come up.
Yeah. So we did have a question come up in the chat. And so Sean, I will pass this back to you in just a second. But when migrating data during an ERP implementation, do you recommend migrating all historical data from the old ERP or starting fresh and simply pulling over the new trial balance and keeping the old ERP for a period of time in case any historical records are needed?
My background. And I'm hoping that question came up a little earlier in the presentation, because I explicitly said, don't bring over all your historical data. And I really, really, really mean that. So it's a great question, and it could save your career if you're implementing an ERP. Literally, it's that important. We recommend don't bring over the historical data. Bring over only what you really need for go live. There's the concept of minimum viable product, and you really need to apply that to data migration. As the question, the person who asked the question is spot on there too, that your legacy system, you may be able to just leave it there, right? And even if you have a cloud-based system that charges for a base rate for your app, oftentimes you can negotiate sort of a mothballing of the system, right? Where you're not paying that much for it, but you can still have access to your data. But a lot of our organizations now, they are pulling all of the data out of the old system, and they will put it into some kind of a data store. Even when Amazon Web Services, we're continuing to expect them to take over and dominate the ERP world in the next 5 years, hint, hint. But their sources, their storage is super cheap. They've got some great tools, although the pricing is definitely going up. I will say that for sure. But sometimes you can just shove that stuff up to some temporary data warehouse that becomes your, long-term solution too. And then you have structured data somewhat, so you can do your analytics and reporting off of that. That really is the best way to do it, because it is, I get it. I don't want to lose, like if I had to migrate out of, we use an application called Mavenlink or Kantana for our time tracking system. This has every timesheet for the last 6 years in it, right? For every client we've had, hundreds of projects. And if we were to move to a different system, I'd be the first one to say, don't you dare bring that over, because it's just not worth it. We'll go into the old system. We'll have a user ID that can go in and look at that stuff. Because here's the other piece too, is if you can hold on to the old system, get into your new system with your MVP, then you start using your new system, then you'll start to find out also what the information is really that you or the other users are really looking for. Because you may think they want historical vendor purchases, but they don't care about that. Somebody actually cares about some random thing like throughput time on certain bombs and how long it takes to manufacture them. It seems like they should care about that, right? And so you just kind of work your way through MVP on your new system, and then you can kind of work through data migration from some of those approaches that I mentioned. Good. All right. I think that's it. Let's go on. So we do have a couple events coming up here. This one here, but also I think this link takes us to our website, where there's more site events that are coming up in the future. We have quite a bit coming up about industry trends, like specific industries and the trends for ERP. We just recorded a couple yesterday, Rebecca and I did, and they're pretty interesting. Just sit through them, because there's a lot of jewels at the end of them. So definitely some other things coming up with just kind of our year in review with ERP vendors too. We're actually going to go to another conference. Rebecca's going to get out to some other conferences here in January. We'll do some reports on those as well. So tons of stuff coming up. But at the end of the day, I want to thank you guys for listening to our presentation here on our next slide. There's my information. That's my cell phone. You can text or call. Always reach out to Rebecca too. She might get back to you a little sooner. But this is not easy stuff, but you can get through it once you have the knowledge. And talking at more of a hostile tone today, maybe it sticks a little bit different than my usual cheery, bright, bubbly self. But sure hope everybody has great holidays. And thanks again for joining us.
Yeah, I'm going to wrap this up just a little bit so that everyone has all the information they need for the CPE. But thank you again, Sean, for joining us. Everyone for joining us for today's webinar. If you have any questions that you were unable to ask, please do reach out to us. Like Sean said, either myself or him, call, email. It's all available on our website. Also, if you would like a copy of the deck from today's presentation, I did see some people asked, please do let us know. Send me an email. email. I'll make sure that you receive all of that. We'd be happy to send it to you. And again, if you need CPE credit for today's presentation and you answered each of the polling questions, please send an email to myself, Rebecca@ERPAdvisorsGroup.com. Be sure to join us for our next event, which is actually scheduled for today, Thursday, November 14th or December 14th at 12 o'clock. What to really expect before, during, and after your ERP go live, where we will do exactly that. We will discuss what you should really expect before, during, and after your go live cutover. Please go to our website at erpadvisorsgroup.com for more details and to register. ERP Advisors Group is one of the country's top independent enterprise software advisory firms. ERP Advisors Group advises mid to large size businesses on selecting and implementing business applications from enterprise resource planning, customer relationship management, human capital management, business intelligence, and other enterprise applications, which equate to millions of dollars in software deals each year across many industries. Thank you again for joining us.